From NPR News, this is live special coverage of A Concert for Hope. I'm Guy Raz. In just a moment, we'll go live to the Kennedy Center here in Washington, D.C. The president, the vice president, and stars from the music world will be commemorating the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. It's the finale of a long day of memorial events. Earlier, President Obama honored the victims of the attacks in the three locations where those planes went down and thousands died. At the World Trade Center site in New York, he read from the Book of Psalms.
Even though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though its waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with its swelling, there is a river whose stream shall make glad the city of God.
Thousands of people gathered in New York, in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and here in Washington at the Pentagon.
Never before in our history has America asked so much over such a sustained period of an all-volunteer force. So I can say without fear of contradiction or being accused of exaggeration, the 9/11 generation ranks among the greatest our nation has ever produced, and it was born right here on 9/11.
Vice President Joe Biden earlier today at the Pentagon. And now the Day of Remembrance concludes at the Kennedy Center with what's being called a Concert for Hope. It's the only event of the day where the president will give a full-fledged address. With me here in the studio are NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving and our senior White House correspondent Scott Horsley. Scott, Ron, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Guy.
Good to be with you, Guy.
Scott, really a day of reflection for all Americans, especially, it seemed, the president who visited all three sites where those planes crashed.
That's right. And it actually started yesterday for the president when he and the first family took part in a service event. The White House was encouraging Americans to remember September 11th by doing some service for their community. And then he began early this morning at Ground Zero, traveled on to Shanksville, and then took part in a wreath laying at the Pentagon as well.
And, of course, this event today is the finale of a day of remembrances, Ron, a day really about moving forward.
This is a day we've all anticipated, I think, with mixed emotions, a confusion of feelings, great sadness, certainly great reverence for those we lost, and not a little apprehension as well, even dread, perhaps. These are not memories we want to relive. These are not scenes of our lives we want to revisit. And yes, I think there has been some yearning for some release now, a sense of future, and perhaps moving on.
Okay, well, let's turn now to the Kennedy Center, where the program has just begun.
By the National Cathedral to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the September 11th tragedies. Obviously, we're not in the cathedral tonight because of recent damage following the earthquake and the hurricane. The building is temporarily closed, but rest assured, this angel, which stands before us, will be returned to its proper place soon. I want to thank the Kennedy Center for kindly making this concert hall available for all of us tonight. And I want to introduce you to Sam Lloyd, the Dean of the National Cathedral.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this very special evening, and thank you, Anderson. On behalf of the Washington National Cathedral, I want to welcome you to this culminating event in what has been for us a weekend-long commemoration of 9/11. 3 days after the first 9/11, the cathedral, in its role as the nation's church, hosted a national service of prayer and remembrance. Now, 10 years later, we're pleased to welcome once again the President of the United States and viewers from across the country to this concert for hope. Tonight, we will not only honor those who died and who served so heroically, but we will turn our thoughts to building together a world where such terrible events no longer occur. I wish we were gathering this evening under the soaring arches of the cathedral, but we have made every attempt to transform this beautiful concert hall into something very close to a sacred space. Thank you for joining us this evening, and God bless you all.
3 days after the attacks, on September 14th, 2001, President George W. Bush made the following remarks in the National Cathedral. "Now come the names, the list of casualties. They are the names of men and women who began their day at a desk or in an airport busy with life. They are the names of people who faced death and in their last moments called home to say, be brave, I love you. They are the names of passengers who defied their murderers and prevented the murder of others on the ground. They are the names of men and women who wore the uniform of the United States and died at their posts. They are the names of rescuers, the ones whom death found running up the stairs and into the fires to help others."
Ladies and gentlemen, multiple Grammy Award winner, Alan Jackson.
That September day, were you in the yard with your wife and children, working on some stage in L.A.? Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising up against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor, or did you just sit down and cry? Did you weep for the children who lost their dear loved ones, pray for the ones who don't know? Did you rejoice for the people who walk from the rubble, sob for the ones left below? Did you burst out with pride for the red, white, and blue, the heroes who died just doing what they do? Did you look up to heaven for some kind of answer? Look at yourself and what really matters. I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things He gave us. The greatest is love. And where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day? Teaching a class full of innocent children, driving down some cold interstate. Did you feel guilty? You're a survivor in a crowded room. Did you feel alone? Did you call up your mother and tell her you loved her? Did you dust off that Bible at home? Did you open your eyes, hope it never happened, close your eyes and not go to sleep? Did you notice the sunset, first time in ages, speak to some stranger on the street? Did you lay down at night and think of tomorrow, go out and buy you a gun? Did you turn off that violent old movie you're watching, turn on Island Blue Series? Did you go to a church, hold hands with some stranger, stand in line and give your own blood? Did you just stay home and cling tight to your family? Thank God you had somebody to love. I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But But I know Jesus and I talk to God. And I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things He gave us. The greatest is love. The greatest is love. The greatest is love. Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day?
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
The Bible tells us, weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. 10 years ago, America confronted one of our darkest nights. Mighty towers crumbled, black smoke billowed up from the Pentagon, airplane wreckage smoldered on a Pennsylvania field. Friends and neighbors, sisters and brothers, mothers and fathers, sons and daughters, they were taken from us with a heartbreaking swiftness and cruelty. And on September 12, 2001, we awoke to a world in which evil was closer at hand and uncertainty clouded our future. And in the decades since, much has changed for Americans. We've known war and recession, passionate debates and political divides. We can never get back the lives that were lost on that day or the Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice in the wars that followed. And yet, today it is worth remembering what has not changed. Our character as a nation has not changed. Our faith in God and in each other, that has not changed. Our belief in America, born of a timeless ideal that men and women should govern themselves, that all people are created equal and deserve the same freedom to determine their own destiny, that belief, through test and trials, has only been strengthened. These past 10 years have shown that America does not give in to fear. The rescue workers who rushed to the scene, the firefighters who charged up the stairs, the passengers who stormed the cockpit, these patriots define the very nature of courage. Over the years, we've also seen a more quiet form of heroism. In the latter company that lost so many men and still suits up and saves lives every day. The businesses that have been rebuilt from nothing. The burn victim who's bounced back. The families who press on. Now, last spring, I received a letter from a woman named Suzanne Swain. She had lost her husband and brother in the Twin Towers, and said that she had been robbed of so many would-be proud moments where a father watches their child graduate or tend a goal in a lacrosse game or succeed academically. But her daughters are in college, the other doing well in high school. It has been 10 years of raising these girls on my own, Suzanne wrote. I could not be prouder of their strength and resilience. That spirit typifies our American family. And the hopeful future for those girls is the ultimate rebuke to the hateful killers who took the life of their father. These past 10 years have shown America's resolve to defend its citizens and our way of life. Diplomats serve in far-off posts, and intelligence professionals work tirelessly without recognition. 2 million Americans have gone to war since 9/11. They've demonstrated that those who do us harm cannot hide from the reach of justice anywhere in the world. America's been defended not by conscripts, but by citizens who choose to serve. Young people who signed up straight out of high school, guardsmen and reservists, workers and business people, immigrants, and fourth-generation soldiers. There are men and women who left behind lives of comfort for 2, 3, 4, 5 tours of duty. Too many will never come home. Those that do carry dark memories from distant places and the legacy of fallen friends. The sacrifices of these men and women and of our military families reminds us that the wages of war are great, and that while service to our nation is full of glory, war itself is never glorious. Our troops have been to lands unknown to many Americans a decade ago, to Kandahar and Kabul, to Mosul and Basra. But our strength is not measured in our ability to stay in these places. It comes from our commitment to leave those lands to free people and sovereign states, and our desire to move from a decade of war to a future of peace. These 10 years have shown that we hold fast to our freedoms. Yes, we're more vigilant against those who threaten us, and there are inconveniences that come with our common defense. Debates about war and peace, about security and civil liberties, have often been fierce these last 10 years, but it is precisely the rigor of these debates and our ability to resolve them in a way that honors our values and our democracy that is the measure of our strength. Meanwhile, our open markets still provide innovators a chance to create and succeed. Our citizens are still free to speak their minds, and our souls are enriched in churches and temples, our synagogues and our mosques. These past 10 years underscores the bonds between all Americans. We have not succumbed to suspicion, nor have we succumbed to mistrust. After 9/11, to his great credit, President Bush made clear what we reaffirm today: the United States will never wage war against Islam or any other religion. Immigrants come here from all parts of the globe, and in the biggest cities and the smallest towns, in schools and workplaces, you still see people of every conceivable race and religion and ethnicity, all of them pledging allegiance to the flag, all of them reaching for the same American dream. E pluribus unum, out of many, we are one. These past 10 years tell a story of our resilience. The Pentagon is repaired and filled with patriots working in common purpose. Shanksville is the scene of friendships forged between residents of that town and families who lost loved ones there. New York remains the most vibrant of capitals of arts and industry and fashion and commerce. Where the World Trade Center once stood, the sun glistens off a new tower that reaches towards the sky. Our people still work in skyscrapers. Our stadiums are still filled with fans, and our parks full of children playing ball. Our airports hum with travel, and our buses and subways take millions where they need to go. And families sit down to Sunday dinner, and students prepare for school. This land pulses with the optimism of those who set out for distant shores and the courage of those who died for human freedom. Decades from now, Americans will visit the memorials to those who were lost on 9/11. They'll run their fingers over the places where the names of those we loved are carved into marble and stone. And they may wonder at the lives that they led. And standing before the white headstones in Arlington, and in peaceful cemeteries and small town squares in every corner of the country, they will pay respects to those lost in Iraq and Afghanistan. They'll see the names of the fallen on bridges and statues, at gardens and schools, and they will know that nothing can break the will of a truly united States of America. They will remember that we've overcome slavery and civil war, we've overcome red lines and fascism and recession and riots and communism and, yes, terrorism. They will be reminded that we are not perfect, but our democracy is durable. And that democracy, reflecting as it does the imperfections of man, also give us the opportunity to perfect our union. That is what we honor on days of national commemoration. Those aspects of the American experience that are enduring, and the determination to move forward as one people. More than monuments, that will be the legacy of 9/11. A legacy of firefighters who walked into fire and soldiers who signed up to serve, of workers who raised new towers and citizens who faced down their private fears. Most of all, of children who realized the dreams of their parents. It will be said that we kept the faith, that we took a painful blow, and we emerged stronger than before. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. With a just God as our guide, let us honor those who've been lost. Let us rededicate ourselves to the ideals that define our nation. And let us look to the future with hearts full of hope. May God bless the memory of those we lost. And may God bless the United States of America.
President Obama speaking at the Kennedy Center. You're listening to live special coverage from NPR News of the 9/11 commemoration, A Concert for Hope. I'm Guy Raz. With me in the studio are NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving and White House correspondent Scott Horsley. Scott, a moving speech from the president. He talked, of course, about political divides and divisions, but he also stressed unity, the common bonds that really defined America on 9/11.
That's right. And he seemed to be saying, you know, living well is sort of the best revenge. It is a moving speech, beginning with the line from the 30th Psalm, you know, joy cometh in the morning. It was not a speech about joy, but it was a speech about resilience. And he talked about the letter he got from Suzanne Swain, a 9/11 widow, and the children that have grown up without a father. One of the most moving parts of this morning's service, I thought, at Ground Zero was when a young man whose father had worked on the 88th floor of the World Trade Center talked about all the experiences of his teenage years that his father hadn't been there for, but also how he was trying to make his father proud. And I think that was the theme of resilience that the president was underscoring tonight.
Understated appearances from the president today. He spent about an hour in Shanksville at the memorial there earlier today and read a brief prayer from a psalm at the World Trade Center site today. This was the first time, Ron, the president really addressed the events of today.
Tonight was his main speech, really his only true speech, as you said, about the events of the day. Earlier in the day, he was really attending. He was greeting the families of the people who were lost. He was showing his respects, laying wreaths, things of that nature. And tonight, I thought, by again turning to the Psalms, the president was in a sense transcending somewhat the usual difficulties that people have deciding how religious or not religious to be in these ceremonies. Mayor Bloomberg today tried to stay away from having any religious leaders speak at the ceremonies. But you know, the thing about the Psalms is that they do have that effect of, to some degree, transcending any specific religious practice and speaking really, although they come from the Bible, to people of all faiths.
Mm. I note, Scott Horsley, that President George W. Bush spoke at Ground Zero today as well, and quoted from a letter that Abraham Lincoln received, wrote to a
woman who'd lost all five of her sons in the Civil War, and talked about how his Abraham Lincoln's words were a poor substitute and could do nothing for her loss, but how important their sacrifice had been for preserving the Union. And George Bush was sending that same message to those who lost loved ones on 9/11.
It was quite extraordinary to see those scenes today in all of those places and to see all of those people together, President Obama and Bush and Vice President Biden and Governor Tom Ridge and Rudy Giuliani and George Pataki, all the people who became so familiar at that time. Let's, for a moment, go back to the Kennedy Center, where we are hearing the Concert for Hope. This is a 9/11 commemorative service. We'll hear from Christy Ferrer. She is, her husband was killed in the World Trade Center attacks.
Near or above where the planes hit, the top 19 floors of the North Tower and the top 33 floors of the South Tower. I quote from British journalist Ian McEwan. The tower was burning around her, and she was speaking on her mobile phone. She was calling to say goodbye. There was really only one thing for her to say. Those three words that all the terrible art, that all the worst pop songs and movies, the most seductive lies can somehow never cheapen. Those three words, I love you. She said it over and over again before the line went dead. And that is what they were all saying down their phones from the hijacked planes, from the burning towers. Love was all they had to set against the hatred of their murderers.
Ladies and gentlemen, multiple Grammy Award winner, Patti LaBelle.
We're all two steps away from happiness, two steps away from loving our neighbor, black, white, straight, or gay. You gotta think. It's hard to see the fear inside. As I walk away from you, distance overcomes the miles. As slowly we'll pull through, and I cannot reach the world today, 'cause I'm suffering for you. They made.
that shows you, and the warring hearts, and winter came.
You're listening to live special coverage of the Concert for Hope at the Kennedy Center here on NPR News. It's commemorating the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. I'm Guy Raz, and we just heard from Patti LaBelle performing the song Two Steps Away. And here with me in the studio is NPR's White House correspondent Scott Horsley and senior Washington editor Ron Elving. Ron, earlier we spoke about all of the people who were at various sites together today in the last few days, Bill Clinton with George W. Bush and today, of course, President Obama and President Bush and Tom Ridge and Mayor Giuliani and Governor Pataki, all of these political adversaries, but of course today wasn't about that. Let me ask you about the political landscape of the country now, 10 years on. That landscape has changed pretty dramatically.
It has, and in one particular way that seems a especially bitter legacy of 9/11, and that is that after a brief period of time of rapprochement and cooperation between the parties, of course, the famous singing of God Bless America on the steps of the Capitol, after that brief period of time, partisanship returned in a big way, not just in 2001, but in all of the subsequent years, and if anything, seems to have been almost on a steady continuum towards greater division in our politics, greater brackishness about the division in our politics. And so while previous 9/11 anniversaries have been pretty good for this and have shown us some opportunities for people to show better will, goodwill to their colleagues across the aisle, today was an especially meaningful time for this to happen with the former presidents, as you say, and particularly former President Bush, reading that letter that we spoke of earlier at the New York commemorative and taking part in these ceremonies and having this sense, at least, that at least for a moment, at least on this anniversary, we can all be singing from the same hymn book.
And Scott, of course, this president, President Obama, came into office with the promise of transcending those divisions, and he has expressed very recently a deep frustration at his inability to do so.
Brand Obama was very much born in the 2004 Democratic Convention, where he gave that speech that certainly launched him on the national stage, talking about, you know, not a red America and a blue America, but one America, and it has been a great source of frustration, and he has been unable to bridge those divides. If anything, the divides have gotten wider under his administration.
And I note that, Scott, there's a new poll out today in the Washington Post. It shows the president with a 62% approval rating when it comes to dealing with terrorism. Other surveys show that his overall approval rating is in its 40s. Quite extraordinary. Many people would not have imagined that the president's highest approval rating would be for the way he deals with terrorism.
Certainly not. And, of course, you can't send a SEAL team into a compound to try to free up the jobs. That's what he needs to do to boost his standing on the economy.
Ron Elving, sort of in the background to all the commemorations that have been taking place this weekend, was, in fact, a terror alert. Here in Washington, D.C., also in New York. Today, some news about possibly three men detained on a flight, a Frontier Airlines flight. Washington, D.C. was on high alert.
On high alert throughout the day. Multi-axle vehicles were restrained from using the tunnels and from using some parts of the thoroughfares here in Washington, D.C. Mm. There was an extraordinary sense of danger, a very high police presence, a quite visible police presence, and of course, I'm sure there were many more officers who we couldn't see.
Scott, Ron, let's go back to the live concert at the Kennedy Center. We'll hear from Anderson Cooper.
These are the words of the Reverend Joseph Griesdiek, who's an Episcopal priest in Manhattan who volunteered at Ground Zero. And then another rescue worker said to me, "Father, we need you over here." And I went over to where the rescue worker called me, and he said, "We need you to bless the buckets." I didn't know what he was talking about until the first bucket was put under my nose. As I looked deeper into the bucket, I was convinced of a truth that I had always paid lip service to, but now knew was undeniable and as real as it gets, that we are all one. It doesn't matter what our race, creed, gender, or background happens to be, we are all one. We live together. Ultimately, we die together.
Oh.
the second movement of Leonard Bernstein's Chichester Psalms, performed by the Marine Chamber Orchestra and the National Cathedral Choir. You're listening to special coverage from NPR.
Ladies and gentlemen, the president of the Pentagon Memorial Fund, Jim Lachek, who lost his brother Dave in the Pentagon.
As we commemorate that fateful September here in the United States, we must remember that citizens of more than 90 nations perished that day. They came to build better lives for themselves, their children, their loved ones. They were members of many races and many religions. Monsignor Lorenzo Albacete wrote, "Here there were Jews, Christians, Buddhists, Muslims, atheists. There were rich, there were poor. There were CEOs, there were waiters. There were newlyweds, there were widowers. It was humanity. An affirmation of human dreams, of human ambition, of human desire, of the hope of human progress."
I think there's a lot of hope that the world...
You're listening to special live coverage of a concert for hope at the Kennedy Center from NPR News, commemorating the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. I'm Guy Raz. Here in the studio with me is NPR's White House correspondent, Scott Horsley, and senior Washington editor, Ron Elving. Ron and Scott, before we went back to the concert, we were talking about a little bit about the political landscape and certainly the security landscape. Scott, earlier today, on the program, and all things considered, I spoke with former Attorney General John Ashcroft. He essentially said that he believes the nation is more secure today than it was 10 years ago, but that we will never be completely prepared for terrorist threats. Is that the general sentiment that you hear in the White House?
I think that's right, Guy. It's not something they talk about in those terms, but obviously the defensive posture of the United States is to try to stop every single terrorist attack, and a would-be terrorist only has to be successful one time out of 1,000. Certainly, our intelligence gathering has gotten better. We're all more vigilant, but we continue to see episodes where dots go unconnected, and there are still gaps that we see exposed. We've been fortunate that, for example, with the Christmas Day attempt on the airliner landing in Detroit, that just good luck kept that from being carried out. But I think there's certainly a recognition among the professionals that they'll do everything they can to stop every terror attack, but it's impossible to catch everybody.
And indeed, before the break, Ron Elving, we were talking about the newest threats. Some credible threats against Washington, D.C. and New York City that, of course, to this point have not materialized, but still a concern and a fear.
Just in the last week, we have had these heightened warnings from our national security apparatus. This is exactly what these people need to do and have to do. They have to tell us that they have received some information that has heightened their own sense of warning. But this is also part of the day. It's a sense of unease and perhaps foreboding that even as we go forward in hope from a time like this, we also carry with us the apprehension that we now know that there are people in the world who will do these things to us, who will use whatever means they can, and we can never go back to the innocence of pre-9/11.
Ron Elving, stand by. Scott Horsley, stand by. Let's go back to the live special coverage of a concert for hope at the Kennedy Center. We'll hear from Anderson Cooper.
We all seek happiness and try to avoid suffering. The problems we face today, violent conflicts, destruction of nature, poverty, hunger, and so on, are human-created problems which can be resolved through human effort, understanding, and a development of a sense of brotherhood and sisterhood. We need to cultivate a universal responsibility for one another and the planet we share. Although I found my own Buddhist religion helpful in generating love and compassion, even for those we consider our enemies, I'm convinced that everyone can develop a good heart and a sense of universal responsibility with or without religion. The National Cathedral's concert, A Call to Compassion, concludes with international opera star Denise Graves singing Amazing Grace.
Ladies and gentlemen, mezzo-soprano and cultural ambassador for the United States, Denise Graves.
Oh, for God's sake.
Thank you for being part of a call to compassion offered by the National Cathedral. Good night.
You've been listening to live special coverage of a concert for hope from the Kennedy Center. This is NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. NPR's Ron Elving and Scott Horsley are here in the studio with me. Gentlemen, first to you, Ron. What stuck out for you from all the commemorative ceremonies this past weekend?
On an emotional moment just now, the reprise of that flute that we had heard earlier today in the commemorative services, the flute playing the same tune, Amazing Grace, carrying a kind of, if you will, theme throughout the entire day. I think, though, what's going to stick in my mind more than anything else would be the families. The families holding high the pictures of their loved ones lost, and then the reading of their names, oftentimes with brief messages, salutes to those people whose names they had just read. Then finally, the moments of silence. Those are the moments when our own thoughts come back to us.
Scott?
Well, you know, that question that Alan Jackson poses at the beginning of his song, where were you on the, that September morning when the world stopped turning? And all of us have spent some time this weekend, I think, thinking about where we were and all that's happened in the decade since, a decade of loss, but also a decade, as the president said, of resilience. And we were lost on that September morning, and maybe we're starting to find our way back.
Indeed. Ron Elving, Scott Horsley, thank you so much for spending time in the studio with me this evening.
My pleasure.
You can find more reflections on today's anniversary in images, music, and blogs at our website, npr.org. You've been listening to special coverage from NPR News of a concert for hope from the Kennedy Center. I'm Guy Raz. Thanks for listening.